We're holding on Ein Testament Day's last three words. Mishnah said, Joik de Lichter, that if a person carries ink on Shabbos, then the amount is higher for as if it's enough to write two letters. Tana, so we learn in a Braisa about this. Shtei Oisius Bidyoi, it means whether we're talking about that he has two letters worth of dry ink, the way they used to make ink in those days, we learned about this in Nidda, we learned about this sporadically here and there, was that they made it as like dry cakes, and then when they needed, and they it was made out of soot mixed with oil and mixed with some other things and whatever, and it was made into dry cakes. And when you wanted to write, then you would soak one of them in gallnut juice and or something like that, and then you'd write with it. So like this, if you have two letters worth of dry ink, or shtei osiyos bekolmos, or you have two letters worth in a pen, on a pen, or shtei osiyos bekalmorin, or two letters worth of ink in the inkwell. Now the point is, even though in each of those cases, you're not going to actually necessarily get two letters out of it, because if you have, for example, two letters worth of ink on the pen, you can't get all the ink off the pen. Some of it stays stuck to the pen. Nevertheless, you're still chayim. Although there is a Rishonim bring from a Yerushalmi that says that no, that in all those cases, it means you have to have two letters worth that you can write exclusive of what stays on the pen or in the inkwell or whatever. And Rabbi Hanano, in fact, wants to say that's what all Gemara means as well. So Boy Rava, so Rava asked, and by the way, now what would be is obviously if you have that, then he's chayev for the ink. He's not, now he wouldn't be necessarily chayev separately for carrying the pen or the inkwell or what have you, because we're going to have later on a Mishnah that says that if a person carries out something in a keli, then the keli is tofel for it. We touched on this back in the sixth parak in connection with a perfume bottle. So if you have two letters worth of ink in the inkwell, for example, then we don't really care about the fact that he's carrying the inkwell itself. We care about the fact that he's carrying the ink. But less than that, he'd still be poser because the ink is too little to be chayev, and the inkwell also would be poser to it. So Boy Rava, the Rava asked the question, what about ois achas v'dyoi, ois achas v'komos, ois achas v'kalmer in mahu? What would happen if you had some ink in the form of the dry thing, some enough to write one letter, then you had one letter's worth of ink on the pen, and one letter's worth of ink in the inkwell, would those combine? Because after all, the Tosca says, the point of the question is, two pens, sure, would combine. If you had one pen with one letter's worth of ink and another pen with another letter's worth of ink, sure, those would combine. But here, where it's different kinds of things, maybe they don't combine. Especially if we take the view that we just said, that according to the Yerushalmi, and maybe all Gemara holds like this also, that you have the different things have different shiurim because the amount that you can get when you have two letters worth of ink on the pen, you're going to get more, you only have a very little left on the pen, as opposed to in the inkwell, you're going to have more left over, and therefore you need a larger amount to begin with. So the Gemara is asking, given that they have different shiurim, do they combine? Or maybe not, since after all, the point is throughout that you need two letters worth, and the Gemara says, take cool. So if the person does that, you can't have him bring a carbon copy. So while we're talking about ink and about writing, so the Gemara digresses to talk about some other dinim with Hilchos Shabbos. Omar Rava, hoitzi shtei osiyos. If a person took out on Shabbos two letters worth of ink, for example, we said he had a pen with ink on it and he carried it out on Shabbos, where then we said if there's two letters worth of ink in the pen, then he's chayev. The kosman krum halach, meanwhile, as he's walking along, he writes them down on a piece of paper that he's carrying with him. Then he's chayev, even though you would say there's an akira, there's not a hanocha. Where's the hanocha? The answer is ksivosan zuhi hanochosan. Writing it down is the equivalent of doing the hanocha. Tosfos actually explains, not over here, but near the beginning of the Masechta, we had a case over there where you have a nut floating on water, or actually we had a case, the nut was that within a keli, and the keli is floating on the water, if you were to take the nut out of the keli and put it someplace else, would that be considered an akira? Would that be considered an akira or not? Or would we say that since the keli is floating on the water, then it's not considered that you're being oiker from someplace someplace permanent? It's not placed there to begin with. It's floating on the water, or maybe not, because relative to the keli, we said it's not moving. The Tosfos explains over there that when it comes to our Gemara, there's no question it would count as hanocha, because the fact of the matter is the ink goes onto the paper and it stays there forever. So that would be considered a hanocha. There's also the point we learned over there in the Gemara also that usually you need a hanocha on top of a place arba al arba. But over here, you don't need that, even though the paper is far smaller than that, because we had a concept over there, just like we said, a person's hand counts to him as if it was a place, 4x4, and they have 4x4 tefachim, and therefore, therefore he's chayev for taking something, for taking something out of his hand or putting it into his hand, on Shabbos. So it is over here also, even though the paper is not 4x4, it's where he intends to write, and therefore it's considered for him like Mokham Abba Al Abba. The Omar Rava, also Rava says in this connection, suppose a person takes out one letter's worth of ink and he writes it down on Shabbos, because of a Hoisi Ois Achas HaKosva, then he brings out another letter's worth of ink and he writes it, potter, so then he's potter, even though it was all in one halon. Now, obviously, by the way, we're not talking about the question of whether he's chayav for the writing. Obviously, he's going to be chayav for the writing. What we're getting at over here, though, is the question, is he also going to be chayav for the carrying? So is he going to be bringing two chatois or only one? The rabbi is saying that he's actually going to be potter for the writing, my timer. Now, why is that? The idna, the afkila, basraisa, chosala, the shiur, the kamaisa. Because when he brings out the second one, the first one is already dried up, and therefore you don't have the proper shiur. We just said you need the shiur of two letters worth. By now, when he brings out the second one and writes it, you don't have the first one is already considered gone for that purpose. So you don't end up with a full shear, and therefore he's potter. So again, for the writing he'll be chayev because it was all behelam echad, but for the putting down for the hanocha, he's going to be potter because there wasn't hanocha of a full two letters worth. Because by the time he did the hanocha of the second one, then the first one is already dried up. By the way, when we're saying over here that writing is called hanocha, maybe this is where we get the expression a hanocha for a written sicha or a written maima, because that's what you do. Also, you write it down, you lay down the letters on the piece of paper. So again, in the previous case when he wrote both of them when he's writing, when he's walking, so Rashi says that actually even if he was doing all of this while he's walking, so he never did a hanacha of his guf. We learned in the first parasha that if a person was carrying things on his back, let's say, and then he stopped to rest, then it's considered he did the hanacha at that point. Here he didn't even stop to rest. But nevertheless, he's chayev because it went onto the paper. But again, if he did one and then the other one, then he'd be potter because by the time he writes the second one, the first one is dried up. Okay. But Omar Rava, also Rava says another thing, in a similar case involving hotzah of food, let's say, hoti chasigra geres achas v'hinicha, suppose a person took out a half a gergeres worth of food, and we learned before that when it comes to food, a person is chayev only for a full gergeres. So he took out a half a gergeres, he put it down someplace in the other rishos, v'chaz of a hoti chasi gergeres achas v'hinicha, and then he takes out another half gergeres and puts it down. So what happens is, v'shoina nasa k'misha kolta kelev oishan nitzrufa upater. What happens is, the first half gergeres, we consider as though it wasn't there anymore. We consider it as though a dog caught it in it. So we can think we're on time and hour, about a quarter of the way down. So like this, he carried out half a Gergeres, put it down, then he took out another half a Gergeres. So Rava is saying we consider the first half as if by the time he brought out the second one, a dog had caught it and swallowed it, or as if it was burnt, or potter, and therefore he's potter because you don't have a full Gergeres over there. So now the question is why? Ba'amai ha'mancha. Why should he be potter? After all, the first half of Gergeres is lying over there. Why should we say that? Why should he be potter? Why should he be potter on the grounds that the first half is missing? Or why should the first half be considered missing? The first half is still there. The answer is Hachikama. You're right. He doesn't mean to say that you're going to be potter in all cases. What Rava means, in Kodam, via Rishona, Kodam, Anachashia, if he were to pick up the first half, so it's not on the ground anymore, and before he put down the second one, Nasus Rishona, Kibishin Nikol, so Rishon Nisrafo Potter, then we're going to consider the first one as if it was caught and swallowed by a dog, or as if it was burnt, and then he'd be potter. Because now, at the time you put down the second one, you mevatel the hanocha of the first one, so you don't have a full kugregeres put down there at any one time, and therefore he'd be potter. The Prima Godin, by the way, brings up an interesting point. He asks the question: would we say the same thing by other malachas as well? Imagine, for example, let's say we said in the Mishnah, we're talking right over here, about, for example, writing two letters. What if, let's say, for example, a person were to write one letter on Shabbos, then before he had the chance to write the second letter, the first one got erased, would he be chayav or not? So the Prima Godin brings that up as a question, maybe not. And then the Minchas Chinuch points out that based on something that Rashi says over here, that it comes out that only when it comes to Hitzah, would we say that? It actually uses the expression over here, when the Hitzah is finished, then the first Hanacha is gone, so it's as if it doesn't exist. So the Minchas Chinuch deduces from that Rashi at least would say that by other Malachas it doesn't matter. By other Malachas, even if, let's say, the first letter was erased before he wrote the second letter, he'd still be chayav. But in the case of Hitzah, you need to have the full Gregetus there at any one time. Another case, but Omar Rabba, Hosi Chatzi Gregeres Vehinicha. Another case, a person took out a half Gregeres and put it down in Rosh Hashanah. V'chaz of a Hosi Chatzi Gregeres. Then he took out another half Gregeres. V'hevira Derech Olaha Chayim. He carried the second half Gregeres within above the first one. So then he's chayav because now the two of them combined together, and now he has a full gregeres over there, even though he didn't put it down in Rosh Hashanah. So the question is, v'amai holy noch, why should he be chayav? It didn't land in Rosh Hashanah. The answer is k'ven she'avira toich shloisha. The answer is that we're talking about he brought the second gregeres in the air within three trochim above the first one. So now, what it means is, in other words, So Tosfos points out, if he were to bring it within three tefachim of the ground, then he's chayav regardless, even if it's not above the original one, because the fact that it's within three tefachim of the ground makes it lovered, and now it's considered as though it landed in Rosh Hashanah. Although the Gemara is going to take up that point in a second and see why it should be considered that it landed if the fact of the matter is it didn't land. But anyway, over here what we're talking about is that it's not within three tefachim of the ground, but it is within three tefachim of the first half regeret of food. So that is he had it exactly. It was three tefachim in an espa, let's say, above the ground, but the first half regeret that he brought out is itself a little taller than an espa. So now when he brings it out, then the second half regeret, it's within three tefachim of the first piece. So then we say that the two of them still combine together, lovered, and it's considered as though you have the first one of them, so to speak, like attracts the second one, as if like they're held together by magnets or something. and therefore you have and therefore you have it considered as though you have a full gregeris was taken out all at once. So the question is, Va'amar Rava, didn't Rava himself say that? Now we have a machloekus, you have Akiva and the Chachamim, which is primarily going to be a little further on the 11th perek. We also mentioned it in the first perek. You have a machloekus over there. If somebody throws something from one reshus to another, he throws it from one reshus through another reshus. So you have a case over there. Let's say a person throws something from one reshus to Yachid to another reshus Yachid, but it passes through reshus Rabin. So Rabbi Akiva holds a concept called klutta kamisha hun chadamia. Once it was caught in the airspace of reshus Rabin, it's as if it was put down over there. So therefore, he's going to be chayav for the fact that it landed in reshus Rabin. The Chachamim disagree with him, and even the Chachamim. So Rava says that the Chachamim hold toich shloisha l'rabbanon, even if you're talking about it's within three tzvachim of the ground, the Rabbanon are going to say he's chayav only tzorech hanocha al gabed mashu. It still needs to be that the thing lands on something. The something doesn't need to be, it doesn't itself need to be 4x4 amos. It itself does not need to be a shiur of a roshus, because the fact of the matter is, it's within three tzvachim of the ground, so therefore it's lavud, so it's lavud, and therefore it counts as if it landed on the actual ground, but it has to land on something. In order for him to be chayev. So why over here is Rava saying that he's chayev, even though it didn't actually land on anything, it's still in the air within three tzvachim above the other piece.
According to Rav, it comes out there's two Akiyas and two Anachas. One from the Shishyachit, Shishyachit.
Well, according to Rav Akiva. According to Rav Akiva, right. Right. We touched on that point in the first parak that maybe not, because after all, we discussed the question over there, do you need Akira? Now, David Machem Dalad, maybe at least you say, maybe at least you say that in order to that the Akira has to be all from Machem Choshev, and then we don't care where the Hanacha was. We'll revisit that point later on Das Tzadik Zayin, Bez Hashem, when we talk about the Machlokes of Rav Akiva and the Chachamim. But anyway, the point is that even according to the Rabbanon, needs to land on something. I said Amos before, I meant Tvachim, 4x4 Tvachim. So even the Rabbanon agree, fine, if it's within three Tvachim of the ground, fine, they say it doesn't have to land on it, they not agree, they say it doesn't have to land on, it doesn't have to land on a place 4x4 Tvachim in order to be chayav, but it has to land on something, and only then would we consider it lavud to the ground, whereas Rabbi Akiva is going to consider it that it landed on the ground regardless because it passed through Rosh Hashanah. Anyway, the point is, so over here, Rava is saying that even though it didn't land on the ground, it's still in the air, but within three tefachim above the other half of the earth, he's chayav. Why? The answer is, Lakasha can be zorek, can be mather. There's a difference between throwing something versus passing something through. When you're throwing something, once you throw it, it's out of your control. You can't bring it back. So there you have. It needs to actually land on something in order for it to be considered that it landed. But over here, we're talking about Mavu. Here, we're talking about he's carrying it in his hand from one reshus to another. So as long as his hand is within three tefachim, then already it is. It's not a difference between whether it's in his control or not. It's in his hand. His hand itself is considered like a makam abba. So therefore, and his hand is within three tefachim of the ground, which we actually talked about in the first paragraph about that case, where a person's hand is within three tefachim of the ground, where we said that, in fact, then it is considered like it landed on the ground. So here we're saying the same thing. So it's considered as though already it landed, it's within three tefachim it's on his hand, and his hand itself is within three tefachim of the other piece, and therefore he's high. So that's that. More on that topic. Tanan Abanan. Hoitzi chatzigra geret v'chazav hoitzi chatzigra geret. If a person carried out a half gregarious of food and put it down, and then he took out another half gregarious of food, and it was all behelam echad. It was all in one period of not knowing that this is a malacha, which is also on Shabbos. Chayev, then he's chayev achatem. B'shtei ha'alaymas potter. But if you were to do it in two different ha'alaymas, so he forgot. So after he did the first one, he remembered that he was also to do it, and then he forgot again and did the second half, then he'd be potter. That's, by the way, we mentioned earlier in the previous perek, a machloikus from Gamliel and the Chachamim. We're going to have that machloikus again at the end of the 12th perek of Ar Masechta, where Rabbi Gamliel holds Yesh Yedia L'Chatzi Shir, where he says that if you remember after a half a shir, then you're actually going to need potter. The Chachamim disagree with him. We're obviously going according to the Chachamim over here. But Rabbi Yossi makes a further distinction. Behelam echad l'rshus echad chayev l'shtei l'shur yes potter. Rabbi Yossi makes a further distinction. Were these two carryings of a half of gregarious, were they to one rishus aradim, or were they to two different rishus aradim? So then, in that second case, Rabbi Yossi would say, even though it was behelam echad, we would consider them separate. They don't combine together because they're in two different rishus aradim. So what do we mean by different rishus aradims for this purpose? What divides one rishus aradim for another? So you can see the diagram in Rashi over here. You see a scenario where you have a house on each side of the street. Then you have the rishus aradim, and in the middle of the rishus aradim, you have something else. So Gemara is going to talk about a few different possibilities of what there might be there, which is why Rashi in his diagram labels it rishus ayachid oy timeless oy pisla. We'll talk soon what a pisla is. So Amar Rabba, v'hu sheyesh chiyuv chatas b'nehem. Now, when do we say it would be considered two separate rishus aradim? And Rabbi Yossi would say he's kotter only if those two rishus aradim are divided by something where there would be a chiyuv chatas, meaning that there's an actual rishus ayach between them. So suppose you have, in other words, that in the middle of the street over there, you have, let's say, a house built. So now one side of that, one door of the house opens up to one rishus aradim, and the other one opens up to a different rishus aradim. So then you would say that if he carries out to one side of the rishus aradim and he carries out to the other side of the rishus aradim, then Rabbi Yossi would say that he's potter, because even though both of them are rishus aradim, they're separated by something which is itself a separate rishus. Maybe actually we're not talking about where there's a house there, because then there's the house, but meanwhile you have on the different sides of the house the two rishus aradim do come together. But pashtus, I guess we have to be talking about, as Rashi shows in his diagram over here, where the rishus ayachid divides the entire rishus aradim. So maybe it would be you might have, let's say, for example, nowadays, Eastern Parkway, let's say, is pretty unquestionably a rishus aradim according to almost everybody. So let's say sometimes you have construction on it, and they build those, they build those temporary wooden partitions while they're doing construction on the subway or whatever. So I guess let's say you had something like that, you had partitions like that going the full length of the island on Eastern Parkway, then you would have an example of a rishus aradim which is completely divided by rishus ayachid in the middle. Whatever, the point is that, so then we would say, Rabbi says, then Rabbi Yossi would say that he's potter for carrying to the two different rishus aradim, because neither one is able to combine with the other one, because you have an actual separate rishus in between them, rishus ayachid. Avo kaimelus loy. But Rabbi continues, what if what's dividing the rishus aradim is only a kaimelus? Then we wouldn't say that. A kaimelus is not considered important enough to divide the two rishus aradim, and then we would say that the two of them count as if they were one, and even Rabbi Yossi would agree that he's chayev for carrying the entire gregarious. That's Rabba. Abaya Omer. Abaya says no. A field of kaimelus, even a kaimelus that separates the two halves of rishus aradim would still be significant enough to divide them and make them be considered separate rishuyas, according to Rabbi Yossi. Avo pisla loy, but not if you have a pisla. A pisla, Rashi describes, is a piece of wood that's lying across the rishus aradim, and it's lying across the entire width of the rishus aradim. People step over it when they walk, but it's there, and it actually divides the rishus aradim. So, 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 So then you would say, and by the way, it seems like the way Rashi is describing it, when we were talking about the Rosh Hashanah Yachid or the Rosh Hashanah Abim, we were actually talking about where you have the Rosh Hashanah Abim's length still run. You still have the uninterrupted length of Rosh Hashanah Abim running on both sides of it. Here we're saying that the length of the Rosh Hashanah Abim itself is interrupted by the peace law. Still, Rava is saying, Abaye is saying, that's not enough to make it two separate Rosh Hashanah Abim. A peace law is not considered significant enough to divide one part of Rosh Hashanah Abim from the other one, and therefore if he carried a half gregeris to one part and a half gregeris to the other part, then he would still be chayav even according to Rabbi Yossi. A piece of wood means a piece of wood. What
I was going to say is that in Eastern Park, when you cross over now, they have a little spot that you can stand in between the traffic going both ways. Would that be considered a pistol? That's what I was going to ask.
Well, first of all, a pistol over here is something movable. That Tosfos points out. I'll explain in a second. Tosfos points out, you were talking about a pistol over here is movable, so it's a different thing. We're not talking about something that's a permanent feature. But besides that, I mean, those things, those islands over there, they're not more than, they're less than three tefachim off the surface of the street. And they themselves are meant to walk on also. So Bepashtus, they would count Bepashtus, the islands over there would count as part of Rosh Hashanah Abim themselves. Maybe you could say the benches. Maybe the benches are tall enough to be considered a kindlist or just a yachid or something, or the subway poles or whatever. But not the pashtus. The islands themselves would be part of the shetadim, I would imagine.
They're too low. Okay.
Yeah. So Tosfos talks about a couple of possibilities with this pisla. One is where the pisla is 4x4 amos, but it's less than 10 tefachim tall, which we learned in the first paragraph is called a timeless, or it's 10 tefachim tall, but less than 4x4 amos wide, which would be a makom p'tur. So Tosfos discusses over here that when we say over here that Abaye is saying a pisla is not considered to divide the Rosh Hashanah Abim, so either we're talking about that it's actually not a chimeras, because again, if it's 4x4 and less than 10 tall, it would be considered a chimeras. But, and we just said, Abaye had disagreed with Rabba and said a chimeras would divide Rosh Hashanah Abim. So we have to be talking about over here to the reverse. As in Tosfos, we're talking about, let's say it's exactly 9 tefachim tall, and we learned in the first pedic that in that case, Rabin the Pastinol of people, when they're walking Rosh Hashanah Abim, will use a thing like that that's exactly 9 tefachim tall to adjust the load that they're carrying, and therefore it's considered part of Rosh Hashanah Abim. And then Tosfos says that maybe not. It could even be, we're talking about a pistola that is a regular chimeras. A buyer might distinguish between a chimeras that's movable and a chimeras that's not movable. Over here, the pistola is movable because it's a piece of wood. So therefore, a buyer might say that yes, when Rabba is saying a chimeras doesn't divide Rosh Hashanah Abim, when Rabba says that it doesn't, and a buyer disagrees and says that it does, so fine, a buyer would be saying a permanent chimeras, like the examples that I should give, let's say, for example, a carpet bigger than base Sosayim or whatever, then you would have a divide Rosh Hashanah Abim, and each part is considered separate, and that's when Rabbi Yossi would say he's positive. But a movable chimeras, for example, a pisla, which is large enough, let's say, to be considered a chimeras, but it's movable because it's a piece of wood, then he would say it doesn't divide Rosh Hashanah Abim, it's all considered one big Rosh Hashanah Abim, and therefore even he carries half a gregeris in one part and half in the other, then he would be chayev, even according to Rabbi Yossi, said Abaye. The Rava Amrafi Pisla. Rava then disagrees and says even if there's a Pisla there, that's enough to divide up Rosh Hashanah Abim. And Rabbi Yossi would say that he's potter if he puts the half of Gezeres on each side of it. But as the Rava Latane, in which case Rava is going according to his own Svara, the Amar Rava Roshus Shabbos Kirushus Gitin Damya. Rava says that the rules as far as what's considered a separate Roshus, as far as Shabbos, are the same as the rules as far as what determines what's a different Roshus as far as Gittin. Now you have a case in the Gemara in the Mishnah and in the Gemara in Gittin where the husband throws a get to his wife. I imagine nowadays you could have, let's say now in the time of coronavirus, imagine, you know, social distancing, so he doesn't want to give it to her in person, so he throws it to her. But let's say whatever. So he throws her the get. And now the din is that you have to have the get has to land in her reshus. If it doesn't land in a hurishus, then it doesn't work. It's not a valid get. So what happens, let's say, for example, the Gemara discusses a scenario over there where the husband and the wife are both standing in his chaser, or he's standing in his house, she's standing in his chaser, whatever. He lent her a part of his chaser. He lent her his chaser in order that she should be kind of the get that way. So he threw her the get out the window or whatever. Instead of landing on the ground of the chaser, it actually landed on a pisla in the chaser. And again, as Tosfos says, you have the two possibilities over there. Either the pisla is in effect a karmelus, because it's four by four amos, but less than 10 fucking tall, or it's a makom p'tur, because at least 10 tall, but it's less than 4x4 wide. Whatever it is, it landed on the pisla. So the Rava says over there that it doesn't work, because when the husband lent his wife the chaser, he's only meaning to lend her one place, not two. And the pisla counts as a separate place, because it's a separate rishus. So you see, therefore, that Rava holds in that connection that a pisla counts as something of its own. And so by the same token, Rava's going to say over here that the pisla counts as something of its own, and therefore that you're, and therefore that's considered a separate rishus. It would actually divide up the rishus at Abim, and therefore Rabbi Yossi would say that he's potter even in that case, because the fact remains that you have two different rishus at Abim, and Rabbi Yossi is going to pass him in that case. Okay, getting back now to topic. So that was all a digression. Once we mentioned the matter of taking ink. So now we digress to talk about different dinim involving writing and about doing hanocha with writing, and then we were talking about in general dinim involving hagsah. You know, this isn't the main place to talk about those dinim. Now getting back to our Mishnah, where we're still listing things that if a person carries, I mean, we are talking about Hagsah, all these Prakim are talking about Hagsah, but we weren't talking over here about the general dinim of Hagsah. Here we were focusing mostly more on specific things. If a person carries this thing, then he's chayav for that amount. So now we're going to get back to that. So the Mishnah said, Choyo kedei lichol ayinacha, so if a person carries out on Shabbos eyeshadow, then the shear that he's chayav for is if he takes enough to paint one eye with it. Then last, what do you mean? Ayinach hasholei kachli. Nobody paints only one eye. Now we're not talking about over here where it's being used for healing purposes. That we said before that yes, we talked about, for example, various kinds of animal blood that can be used when a person has a sore eye or an eye infection, then you would use it to paint one eye. Fine. But even as far as killer, we had in the first Mishnah of our parak, we had about killer, or also about a paste or something that's used to apply to the eye, where you dissolve it in water or some other liquid and you apply it to the eye. And we discussed over there that the Meiri wants to say that we're talking about enough to cover one eye for the same reason, because you're doing it for medicinal purposes and not always are both eyes affected at the same time. But here with Paschus, we're talking about eye shadow, which is used as makeup. You don't do only one eye at a time. So why should you be high if only one eye is worth? Amar Rav Huna, so Rav Huna says, because there actually is. She can't snu it, koichlas ayinach. Because women who are exceptionally sneistic, they wrap themselves up and they cover their entire face except for one eye. And that one eye, they put eyeshadow on. So the Gemara says, Macy, I have a contradiction. A Braisa says, Rav Shimon Elazar, I'm a koil, when it comes to eyeshadow, in Lerafua, if the person is using the eyeshadow for medicinal purposes, meaning in other words, so in other words, you have Tosfos explains that it can mean Tosfos brings two possibilities. One is it means if to begin with he put it away for medicinal purposes, then that would be the amount he'd be mechayev him, because we'd be going again. Rav Shimon Elazar had said in the previous perek and in our perek that nischayev zeb machshav teshol zeh, that a person can be that if Reuven sets aside something because he considers it significant, then Shimon can be chayev as a result of that. Because once Reuven acts away, then it's considered chosher for Shimon as well. So here we'd be saying the same thing. Tosfos brings the first possibility that if Reuven put it away for the purpose of medicine, then Shimon would be chayev if he carries it out on Shabbos, even though it's only one eye's worth. And then Tosfos says that not necessarily. What we mean is over here, if it's the kind of eyeshadow that is used for medicinal purposes. You have different kinds of coil. Some of them are used for medicinal purposes, and some of them are used only as makeup. So anyway, so if it's for the four, could they look called eye nachas? Then the amount would be enough to paint one eye. Lekashit v'shtei enayim. But if it's meant for decorative purposes, for makeup, then the amount would be two eyes. So you see that the amount for makeup is two eyes. So why is Rav Huna telling us that even for makeup, the amount is only one eye? So why is Rav Huna saying the amount is only for one eye for makeup purposes? The answer is Tirgma Hilo Breder Shmuel Bar Nachmani Kitanya Hi Be'eroinius. That Breisa is talking about girls. It's talking about women from villages. Eroinius actually translates over here means villages. Literally, Eron means a small city. And in fact, in the Thursday Shas over here, it brings that from a Gemara in Beitza that what it means a small city. It translates it in Yiddish Klein Shtetl Derinim. People from small towns. Anyway, small towns, they don't have to be as theistic because you have fewer people over there, as Rashi says, there's less choish for Kalos Rosh over there because it's a small town. So therefore, their women go with both eyes uncovered, and therefore they paint both eyes. So in other words, it depends. In a place where the women go with only one eye uncovered, then the shear to be chayev is one eye's worth of eyeshadow. In a place where the women go with both eyes uncovered, then the shear would be two eyes worth. And that's all if it's for makeup purposes. If it's for medicinal purposes, then it's always one eye.
Rabbi Alex, shear shear, it says Levitin about Chad Meinayach mean anything?
Okay, so it means that even one eye. So it means, let's say, so Shri Ashirim, that mentions that you made me love you with one of your eyes. Yeah, so it's talking about that kind of thing, Babashkas, where even though she only has one eye uncovered, nevertheless, he sees that one eye and loves her. Yeah. Okay. Continues that. Now, the next part of it here is in parenthesis because it actually belongs further down on the Omer. It's out of order of the way things are in the Mishnah. We might as well just do it over here because otherwise we're going to forget it later on. So the Mishnah had said Shabbat. If a person takes out wax on Shabbat, then the amount is today listen up in neck of cotton. Then the amount is chayav is if it's enough to put on a small hole. So what kind of small hole? Tana. Today listen up in neck of cotton shoyayin, the amount that you would put on a small hole in a wine barrel. Meaning, in other words, that so you have, as we mentioned in the Mishnah, you have a barrel of wine. You make a hole in the barrel in order to be able to get some of the wine out. Afterwards, you stop up the hole with wax. And the point is, we're going according to the shear of wine, even though you have other liquids that you keep in barrels as well, for example, oil and honey, because oil and honey are much thicker, you would need a much larger amount of wax, so you would have a much larger hole. But wine is very common, and we already learned yesterday Abaya's general rule, which is driving everything throughout our perek and these prokim, that whenever you have two different uses of something, and both of them are equally common, or both of them are fairly common, then you go according to the one which is most mechumra. So it is over here, since it's just as common to do this kind of thing when it comes to a barrel of wine. Versus when it comes to a barrel of oil or honey or what have you. Therefore, we go according to the smallest possible hole, which is the one in the barrel of wine. Okay. Then we said in the Mishnah, "Devet kedei listen b'rosh hashachshos." We said a person carries glue on Shabbos, then the shear is if there's enough to put on top of a shachshos. So what is a shachshos? Tana, we learn a brayta. A shachshos is a board, and it means kedei listen b'rosh hashachshos. It's a board that bird trappers put on top of a stick, meaning Rashi describes a person wants to trap birds. What does he do? He sets up a tall stick. Then he puts on top of that stick, he puts a board flat, And then on the board, he puts some glue. And maybe he puts over there, or Rashi doesn't mention, but maybe also he puts over there some bait, some grain or something to attract the bird. So what happens? The bird lands on the board, and because now the board is covered with glue, so the bird sticks there and can't get off, and therefore now the trapper has caught himself a bird. So we're saying the amount of glue we're talking about is the amount it would take to apply to the board like that. By the way, you have the Gemara in Chulin mentions a point over there that if the bird gets stuck by both wings, and then as it's trying to get itself free, it bangs back and forth against the board, then actually you have a problem of trapez, because then you actually have a problem of trapez, because then the bird might then you have a din over there that if a bird lands on something hard, then internal organs might have gotten dislocated. So we'd have to be talking about over here, evidently the bird only got caught by one wing. All we're talking about is he got caught by both wings, and he doesn't care whether it became chafe or not, because he's catching the bird for its feathers or whatever. Anyway, the Rambam has a whole different understanding.
But it lands on his feet, not on his wings, right?
Well, it might, but it might also get its wings stuck to it. Yeah, if it lands on its feet and its wings are free, then yeah, there's no problem. The Rambam, anyway, has a whole different understanding of this. The Rambam describes it in Pirush HaMishnayos that you have a person has a chicken coop, and there's a lot of little chicks running around in there. If you want to grab some of the chicks rather than reaching in and trying to grab them, and they run around, instead what you do is you take something like that. You take a contraption sort of like that, a stick with a board with glue on it, and you pick up the chicks. You reach in with the board, and the chick sticks to the glue, and then you pull it out that way. And obviously, according to the Rambam, I guess it would have to be much less adhesive glue, because all you needed is to grab the chick, not to actually trap it. Okay. The Mishnah had said Zephyrs v'Gophris, today Lassus Kula. We said if a person brings out on Shabbos tar or sulfur, then the amount was today Lassus Nekev. The expression in the Mishnah was enough to make a hole. So what does that mean? Tonic today Lassus Nekev cotton. In order to fix the small hole, as we described in the Mishnah, if you have a container of mercury, which is liquid, so what you do is you stop up the container with zephyr, so gopher, then you make a small hole in it in order to pour out the amount of mercury you need, and then you use the same material, you use zephyr, so gopher, to close back up the hole so the mercury doesn't spill out. So therefore, so that would be the shear a person is hired for, because that has a use, that's the minimum amount that has a useful purpose. Then we said houses can evolve.
Even if your own need is greater or greater than that.
Yes, that's still what we said. Well, we had an opinion of Reb Shimon at the end of the previous parak, where one way of understanding Reb Shimon's opinion was that in fact the person who has in general greater needs is going to have a greater shear. For example, let's say a rich person doesn't care about that tiny little piece. Of that tiny little piece of zephyr, so gophers, and for him it would be a larger shear, but that was only one way of explaining Reb Shimon, and the halacha is not like Reb Shimon anyway. The halacha is that, yes, once we establish an amount that applies to a person who needs zephyr, so gophers, the average person who needs zephyr, so gophers, when they need them for this purpose, in order to close up that hole, once we establish that, then it applies across the board to everybody. Yeah. Okay. Onward. We said houses could elapse as pikorchola. Then we had the case where a person takes out on Shabbos crushed brick crushed brick. Rashi had said on the Mishnah. So then the shear was. Then we had a machlokes in the Mishnah. What the shear for is? You can take this crushed brick and knead it back together to form a sort of paste. So the Chachamim had said that the amount would be enough to smear around the hole in a melting pot. So as we described in the Mishnah, you have a melting pot on the side of the melting pot where you're melting gold, for example. You have a bellows that goes into there, which is how you force air into it in order to force it to burn hotter. And you have a hole over there, and then you smear around the hole. You smear some clay or something. Or in this case, you can use chausis in order to keep the bellows tightly in place. So the Chachamim had said in the Mishnah that that's the amount a person is chayev, and Rabbi Yehuda had disagreed and said the amount to make a stand. Now, the Gemara assumes that what it means to make a stand means to actually build the whole stand, which would require a lot more houses than that. So the question is, remember the shiur of the Yehuda Nafish, are you telling me that Yehuda's shiur is greater? How came along the shiur of the Rabban Nafish? We know for a fact that anywhere that we have Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim disagreeing on these shiurim, Rabbi Yehuda is always taking a smaller size. Rabbi Yehuda is always taking a smaller size. Bitznan, because we learned also in our Mishnah, we said that if a person carries out on Shabbos Geni, which is a kind of soft, pliable grass, so the Chachamim had said that the amount he's chayev is only if it's enough to make a loop to hang a sieve or a sifter, which is a larger amount, and Rabbi Yehuda Oimer, to the little lehemenu, midas mina lakatan. Rabbi Yehuda says, as long as it's enough, that it would be the size that you can measure off a piece of it and then take it to the shoemaker and say, I want a shoe for my kid this size, then that's enough, even though that's smaller than the shoe of the Tanakhama. And the Gemara is taking as a given that everywhere Rabbi Yehuda's shoe is always smaller than the Chachamim. Now, why is that? Because the Rishonim explained basically like this. Again, we have to go back to Abaya's rule near the beginning of the Perek. Abaya had formulated the rule as follows, that when you have two uses for something, and one of them is common and the other one is not common, then you go according to the common one, even if it's a kola. But if you have two uses that both of them are fairly common, then you go according to the smaller one, the chumrah. But basically what it is that Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim are arguing on that point. How common or uncommon does the second use have to be? Is it enough that, do we say if one of them is more common than the other, then that's already enough that we go according to the more common one, even if it's Makula, or do we say the fact is you have the other one is fairly common, maybe it's not as common, that you have to get your kid new shoes as it is, that you have to make loops for sieves and sifters, but nevertheless, Rabbi Yehuda would say it's common enough that you can go according to that. So the same thing over here. Rabbi Yehuda, the Chachamim would be saying the most common purpose of chausis is to use it for the hole around the bellows. Therefore, that would be the amount used. Rabbi Yehuda, meanwhile, would be talking about the pashtus, would be talking about a less common but still somewhat common use, namely to make a stand, a tripod, for the melting pot to sit on top of. But the problem is that's a larger amount. If Rabbi Yehuda is going according to that svara, that we're going according to something which is common enough, then his shield has to be smaller than that of the Chachamim. So why is it over here it's larger? The answer is, you're right. Rabbi Yehuda doesn't mean to build the entire pitfoot, the entire three-legged stand, but rather just to fix it, just to smear on top of it. Specifically, Rashi explains, if it has cracks, then you mix chausis with water or whatever, and you smear it on those cracks to keep them from spreading. So that's a smaller amount than you would use around the hole in the melting pot. So Rabbi Yehuda's shiur does, in fact, come out to be smaller. Okay. Then the Gemara says, the next one, subin kedei litin al pi kurushal tzarkei zav. We said that if you take out bran on Shabbos, then the amount a person is chayev is the amount that you would put on top of a melting pot for gold, because as Rashi had said in the Mishnah, look, in places where they don't have charcoal, they use bran instead to make a fire to melt gold. Or we said over there that Rambam has a different explanation, that if you put the bran over there in order to insulate it and keep the heat from escaping. So turn it on bottom. So we learned in a braisa related to that. Hamoisi seir, if a person takes out on Shabbat's hair, then the amount that he's chayav kedela gabel boy as a kit. Then the amount would be if it's enough to be able to mix together with mud to make mortar. Now, we learned before that when it comes to mixing mortar, you have the mortar or mud or whatever, kit, then the amount was, then the amount that a person is chayav is if it's the amount that would take a revius of water. Because you said over there, you're not going to say that even though the actual amount of tit that you're chayav for, we just said is less than that. But that's what we said. We said a couple of times in the Gemara, a person is not going to go to the trouble of mixing up a batch of a tiny batch of tit like that. He's going to mix up a larger batch and then use some of it for this project and some for another project. So when the tit is already mixed, then there's a smaller shear, but when yet to be mixed, then there's a larger shear. So what we're saying, in the case of hair, hair is related to that. When you have, when there's enough hair, that this is the amount that you would mix in with that amount of tit, when there's the amount that takes it via some water, then that's the amount the person is high for carrying hair. But if he carries out actual mixed mortar already, then lots of tit crucial surface of, then it would be the amount that you put around the hole in the where the bellows goes, as we said. So again, the difference is that so in other words, the idea is if it's not mixed up yet, then you need a larger amount of hair, because again, you're not going to go to the trouble of mixing up only a small quantity of tit. So therefore, you need the amount of hair that would be for a significant amount of tit, as opposed to once the tit is already made, then you have a smaller amount. That's Rashi's girsa. Tosfos brings a different girsa, which is that it's all one thing. Hamotzi seir kedei legabel b'orisa tit, lasis pi kur. That if a person carries out hair on Shabbos, the amount that he's chayav is if it's the amount where you could mix it with the amount of mortar that you would need to put around the hole for the bellows. Meaning, Tosfos says, in other words, again, we said before that nobody's going to bother to mix up a small quantity of tit just for the purpose of putting on the just for the purpose of putting on that hole. But once the tit is mixed, according to the second Girsa, he might take out a very small amount of hair just to mix with that tit, because that's not such a big bother already. Once the tit is already mixed and you're putting in some hair in order to strengthen it, in order to give it some body, so that you might do even for a smaller quantity of tit. So therefore you'd be hired for that. Okay. Next, the Mishnah said sid kedei losud. We said that if a person takes out on Shabbos plaster or lime, really, is a more exact translation of it, then the shear is kedei losud was the amount to smear on a small girl. Literally the expression in the Mishnah was ktana sheba banis, the small one of the girls. So what does that mean? Tana, we learn in a braisa. It doesn't mean a young girl. It means kedei losud. It means the amount that you could smear, the amount that would be useful for smearing on the little finger of a girl. In other words, so as the Gemara is going to talk about soon, you have like this. There's two possibilities why you might be applying this plaster to the skin of a girl in the first place. One is in order to remove hair that you don't want, and the other one is in order to make the skin red and make her look nicer. So actually, in the Mishnah, Rashi had used the explanation that you use the plaster in order to remove unwanted hair. Here, Rashi is focusing and says that it's that you plaster the body in order that then the skin becomes red, and that was considered attractive to have, I guess, like it makes the skin red, it makes it glow, whatever, and therefore the person looks healthier. So whatever it is, the point is, now, as the Gemara is going to say soon, you don't do the whole body at once. That can be dangerous. Instead, you do the body one part at a time. So therefore, when you have enough plaster to be able to put on the little finger of a girl, then that's already enough to be significant as far as Hilchos Shabbos. So again, so the point is, we're not talking about a young girl, because if the point is that you want to remove unwanted hair, or the point is you want to make her look attractive, you don't need that when she's little. You don't need that when she's a baby. You need that when she's a kalamadol, for example. So therefore, it can't mean a small girl. Therefore, it has to mean the small part of a girl, meaning the little finger. So what are we doing over here? What's this business with this plaster? The Amar of Yehuda Amar Rav. So Rabbi Yehuda tells us in the name of Rav like this: "Bnois Yisrael shegiel the pirkon." If you have Jewish girls who have reached already, they've reached their perek, they've developed shtei tzairus, v'loy hegiel l'shanim, but they've not yet reached the age where that should be appropriate. Usually, yeah, that would be when she's 12. But let's say she's younger than that, she's 9 or 10 or 11, and has already developed in shtei tzairus, and she's embarrassed about it, so she wants to remove it. That's Rashi's explanation. A couple of other explanations. Tosfos brings an explanation is that a girl who higiul the pirkan v'loy higiul, they're already a kalamadol, they're of the age to get married, but they don't have a shidduch yet, so they want to beautify themselves. So therefore they would apply this plaster in order to make themselves look more beautiful. Not Tosis' explanation. Rabbi Nachanano gives a third explanation, which is that it's the other way around. If the girl is of the age that her body should already be maturing, but it's not yet, then she's going to use one of these treatments that the Gemara is going to say in order to help her develop faster. Anyway, B'nois Aniyim, the Gemara says, poor girls, Tosis Oisim Basid, what they do is they smear their body, or they smear the unwanted hairs or whatever with plaster, and that makes the hair come off. But notice that Shirim Tofos Oisim Basovas, richer girls use fine flour for the same purpose. But notice Malachim and princesses Tofos Oisim Bashemin Amor. They would smear onto the relevant areas of the body, they would smear Shemin Hamor, oil of myrrh, which myrrh is either musk or myrrh, it's some kind of fragrance. They use it in the Torah, so oil of that is useful for this purpose. Shenema, as they have in the Gemara Tesis, Shisha Chadashim B'Shem and Amur, that the girls who would be, the women who were being brought to Achashverosh, they had part of the treatment was 6 months with Shem and Amur. And they were all, one of them was going to become the queen, and all of them were being pampered and treated like princesses. So we see that all of them were given this treatment. So my Shem and Amur, what exactly is Shem and Amur? Rav Huna Bachia almost stacked. So he says it's what's called in Aramaic or in Greek or something stacked, which is a fragrant oil. Rashi doesn't translate it over here. In other places Rashi explains that it means myrrh, or it means some kind of fragrant oil, a pharosimone or something, whatever. Okay, that's one explanation. Rav Yirmiyah ba'Aba Omer. It means oil from olives that are not yet one-third grown. So that kind of oil is very good for your skin. Tanya, we learn in a braisa in that connection of Yehuda Omer and Antikinon. You have the Mishnah in Menachos says that you're not allowed to use Antikinon for the menorah. What is Antikinon? Or for Menachos, what is Antikinon? It's Shemen Zayis, Shalevi Ashlish, is oil from olives that did not grow one-third of their growth, which is what we just said with Yirmiyah Ba'Aba says, that's the Shemen Amur that they used on Esther and the other women over there. V'loma, Sochin Oisei, so with all of these things, why are they applying them to the skin? Why are you using Shemen Amur, or maybe more generally, why are you using plaster or flour or whatever? It's true, Masha, it's a fair, or Ma'adin Abbasa, because it not only makes the hair fall off, but it also makes the skin itself more delicate and softer. Okay. So in this connection, talking about this matter of using plaster for the purpose, for beauty treatment, the Gemara says, Rav Bibi Havaleg Brasa, Rav Bibi had a daughter, Tofla Aver. What he did is he wanted to beautify her. He wanted to remove the unwanted hair. He wanted to make her skin redder or whatever it is exactly. Anyway, Tufla Aver. What he did is he smeared this treatment on her one Aver at a time, and in the end it worked. The Shokoba Arameya Zuzi. He was able to get 400 zuz for her nazi because now she was very beautiful and everybody wanted to marry her. Rashi describes, she became beautiful. The cup to Allah and Mugamima, people who are suitable, chasanim, are jumping to marry her. The Nusmala Mammon, and they gave a lot of money for the nazi or that Rabibi should agree to marry her off to them or whatever.
Usually it's the opposite. Usually you get the nazi is given by the Kala's father to the chasmi, she didn't sit and learn.
Right. So okay. So man, it's not a, you're right. So it's not a nadin in the sense that we think of it. It's the opposite. It's the opposite of a nadin. Kala girls call it whatever.
Yeah. The trick worked.
On the other hand, haba hahu nochri b'shivavosei. There was a guy who was living in Rabibi's neighborhood, and he saw what happened. But he havalei brata. He also had a daughter. But he did the treatment all at once. He didn't do it one aver at a time like Rabibi did. He figured it works, so therefore it works. So I may as well do it all at one time and get it over with. Omeisa, and the girl died. Omar, so the guy was very upset. Kotter, Rabibi, the brasi, Rabibi killed my daughter. Now, what actually happened over here, the thing is, Mephoshim explained that with Rabbi Hanan explains over here at some length on the side that the thing is, this treatment with plaster does work, but on the other hand, it also raises the body temperature because you as long as the plaster is on, your skin can't breathe. So therefore, so if you do it one aver at a time, then it's safe to do it. But this guy didn't realize that, and he did it all at once. So therefore, his daughter overheated and died. So Amar of Nachman, so Rav Nachman says, by the way, you shouldn't think that everybody needs that treatment. Rav Bibi, the Shossi Shichra, Rav Bibi, who drank a lot of beer, Boyan Bnose Tikva. So his daughters require this kind of beauty treatment in order to get off the unwanted hair and in order to make the skin more delicate and whatever, or more colorful, and non-delicious sin and shichra. But Rav Nachman says, we don't drink beer. Instead, we drink wine or water or whatever. Loi Boyan Binsan Tikva. So our daughters don't even necessarily need that treatment in the first place. For them, they can be beautiful even without that. Okay. Continues the Mishnah. Rabbi Yehuda Omer Kedei Losud Kilku. We said as far as this plaster, so we had a three-way machlokus in the Mishnah. The Tanakhama had said what we just said, that it's the amount of plaster that you could apply to the little finger of a girl. Then we had Rabbi Yehuda said Kedei Losud Kilku, that the amount of plaster a person would be chayav is the amount that it would take to plaster a kilku. And then we said, the Mishnah had also said that Rav Nechemya said the amount to plaster an andifi. So my kilkul or my andifi, what do those words mean? Amar Rav, tida or vas tida. So Rav says, kilkul means the temples of the head. So like the area of hair just above and just next to the ear, like the area that we men wear as pants. That's called that in English it's called the temple. So therefore, so again, you have this hair over there. You don't want to remove it necessarily, but you want to have it actually described as a hashkina there. You want to have to make the hair lay flat so it doesn't stick out in all directions. So the Yehuda would say that's the amount of plaster that a person is chayav for. And then the andifi would be what's underneath that, would be the area where by men where the payas hang down, or where the beard starts growing, the area below the temple, the area by the cheekbones over there. So therefore, so that would be, Rabbi Yehuda would say the amount of plaster is the amount that you would need to put on the temple, and Rabbi Nechemya would say on the cheeks. So the question is, again, remember the shi'ur of the Yehuda Nafish. So you're telling me Rabbi Yehuda is giving a bigger shi'ur than Rabbi Nechemya. How came along the shi'ur of the Rabbanon Nafish? We already established before that the Rabbanon shi'ur is always bigger than Rabbi Yehuda's, and we assume that Rabbi Nechemya is part of the Chachamim. So therefore, how could it be that Rabbi Yehuda's amount, which is the temple, is larger than Rabbi Nechemya's amount, which is the area below the temple, which is a smaller area of hair? The answer is Zutta min Rabbanon min Nafish min Rabbi Nechemya. You're right. Rabbi Yehuda's shear is always short, is always smaller than the Chachamim, but it can still be bigger than Rabbi Nechemya. In other words, Rabbi Nechemya is not necessarily part of all the other Chachamim. You could have, so there's three different things. Rabbi Nechemya would have a larger shear. The Chachamim would have a middle-sized shear. And Rabbi Yehuda would have the smallest shear of all. Okay. So all that is one explanation. Again, that we mean we're talking about the temples and the cheek. So the Gemara says, "Maisi." I have a contradiction though. A Braita says, "Omer Rebbe, Nirin Divrei Rabbi Yehuda b'chavut." Now this we have the machlokes of Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Nechemya, besides which we have the Chachamim. So Rebbe says, actually, we have to distinguish between different kinds of plaster. Is the plaster chavut, which means Rashi says it was mixed. It was mixed with a lot of water. So now it's very soft. It's very thin. And now you're able to use it to smear on a kilkul. So therefore, on the temples over there, we're assuming that kilkul is. So Rebbe says it seems logical to accept the Yehuda's opinion when the plaster is soft like that. The divir of Nechemya Bebeit Satasid, as opposed to it seems more logical to accept the Nechemya's opinion when you're talking about the plaster was mixed with water but and made into egg shapes. So that would be the kind. You don't use that for kilkul. You use that for a different purpose. Now, the Isak Dada, Sido Vastida, if we're talking about the temples and the cheeks, then Aidi Vaidi Chogut. In both cases, you use soft plaster, the kind that was mixed with a lot of water. So why would Rebbe be saying that if the plaster is in the form of that if the plaster is in the form of beta sasid, then it seems logical to accept Rebbe Nechemya's opinion that it's andifi. that your Nechemi's opinion on Difi, which was saying means the cheek or the area, the cheek bones or whatever, then you wouldn't use Beis HaShashin for that. Elo, Omer Rav Yitzchak. So Rav Yitzchak says, okay, Ami Dvei Rav Ami, they said in the yeshiva of Rav Ami, that the word andifi that Rav Nechemi mentions in our Mishnah is actually a andifa. It's actually talking about a kli cheres that has two openings, two spouts. So what happens is Rashi explains, the word andifi in that case would come from a word that means two spouts. So the point is, so it has a higher spout and a lower spout. So what happens? So you use the lower spout when you want to get out liquid from it, but then you want to put liquid back into it. You want to put, let's say, wine back into such a barrel. You have to stop up the bottom spout, otherwise the wine is going to leak out of there. So what do? You take some sieve, you take some plaster, and you stop up. Then you stop up the bottom spout with that, and then you can fill up the container. So Rav Nechemia is saying on Difa that it would be the amount of plaster you'd use for that. Maski for Rav Kahana, however, Rav Kahana asks on that, the chi odam oisa ma oisa an pori, is a person going to let his money go to waste? Meaning that so what happens if you do that, you're not going to put wine in the container that's sealed shut with Sid. The Sid is going to dissolve, and then the wine is going to leak out. You're going to lose all your wine. A person would never do that. Omer Rav Kahana schnosses. So no, Rav Kahana says rather we can say the andifa of our Mishnah is talking about measurements that you have in a large keli. Sometimes you have like on a measuring cup, you have different places that are measured on it. Up till here is a quarter cup, up to here is half a cup or whatever. So you could use sieve for that purpose. You could use plaster for that purpose to mark the various levels on a keli. Up to here is X amount, up to here is X amount. As in fact, we have an example. Kiddushnan, Shnosis Hayubayin. As we have the example, the Mishnah mentions in Menachos that you had a hin container in the Beis Mikdash. And there were markings on it. Ad kan lapor, ad kan la'ayav, ad kan la'tebes. That you had markings on it made like that with plaster or something to show up till here you fill it up for the nesachim of a pyre, which is a larger amount of wine, a larger amount of oil. Up till here for an ayah, which is a smaller amount. Up till here for a tebes. So the same thing. In other words, that's not the halacha. Actually, the halacha is actually they had different measuring cups in the Beis Mikdash for different sizes. But you have the opinion. You have the opinion over there in Menachos. You have the opinion of I think Reb Shimon that you didn't have separate measuring containers for the pyre, the aisle, and the kevis. You had one big container, and then they had markings on it. So the same thing over here, we could be talking about, Reb Nechemia would be talking about then the amount of plaster that you would be using for the markings on a container like that. Rashi brings a different explanation from a different one of his rabbis. Rashi brings that this first explanation that we just said is from Murdi Hazokin, my elder Rebbe. Then he brings a different explanation from his other rabbis, which is that we still are sticking with the idea of andifa meaning the whole body, but what it is you're not doing it. The point is, Reb Nechemia would be saying, according to this, Reb Nechemia would be saying, and Rebbe would be agreeing with him that when you're doing it, not in order to you're just doing it in order to make the skin redder, then you use thicker plaster for it. When you're using it to lay down the hair and make the hair lay flat, you remove it. Then you would use thinner plaster. And so then the Gemara is asking, what are you talking about? You would never do the whole thing at once because, like we said before, in the story of Rabibi and the Goy, you could end up killing her with that. So a person would never waste it. And the answer is, you do it schnosses, you do it piece by piece, you do it limb by limb. Rashi says, I don't like that explanation, because when do we ever find the word schnosses being used for separate limbs like that? And especially to bring the proof from the Mishnah and Menachos, where it uses a taka in the sense of measuring on a container, you don't find. So therefore, Rashi prefers the first explanation that we're talking about. First we said andifa means stopping up the hole in a barrel of wine, and now we're saying it means making the markings on a barrel of wine to show up until what point is a certain measurement. Okay. The Iboy is saying, the Gemara says another possibility you could say, my andifa apusa. Another possibility you can say that on Bifo that Rav Nechemiah is talking about is the forehead. Now, you don't have hair on your forehead, so therefore you'd be putting plaster over there just in order to make the skin redder, not to remove hair. But for that, you could use thicker plaster. For that, you could be using plaster that's in the form of eggs, based as I said, and that was why Rebbe is saying that I think Rav Nechemiah's opinion is more logical to accept in that point. Where do we have an example where the word andifa means the forehead? The chihadahu bal galil, as you have the example of a person from the Galil, the ikwal bavel, who one time visited bavel, the amru like kum droy shlonim b'maisim erkava. So they asked him, the people of bavel asked him, come give us a drosha on maisim erkava, the deep concepts of Kabbalah that are in the story of the Merkava and in the description of the Merkava that's in Yechezkel, very appropriate. This is right before Shavuos. That's after the first day of Shavuos. Maybe the story had to happen before Shavuos. Maybe they wanted to prepare them for hearing that Haftarah. Anyway, Amalahu, so this guy from the Galil said, I will do that. He agreed. He said, Edrish Lachu to the daughter from Nechemiah Lachamre, I'll give you the kind of drasha like the Nechemiah gave to his Chaberim on this topic. In other words, he's saying that I learned from what Rav Nechemiah taught his Chaber, and I'm in turn going to teach you those deep concepts that Rav Nechemiah had taught. However, v'nafka arisa min koizel, but then a hornet came out of the wall, umachse ba'andifi, and it stung him in his forehead, umis, and he died from the sting. But omrulay, so the Chacham said about him, min yilei dolei, it's from his own, is what came to him. In other words, he deserved it for that he was going to teach Ma'aseh Merkava Barabim, which you're not supposed to do. The Mishnah mentions in Chagiga that you're supposed to teach it, that you teach it only if the person is Chacham Maven Midaitoi, only if he understands it well, because otherwise you might misinterpret it, because these ideas. Nowadays, we have, of course, the Arizal said, Mutu Mitzvah Legalis Zua Chochma, that Adrabe is a mitzvah to reveal these secrets of Kabbalah, because we're closer to the times of Mashiach, and the Jewish people need it. But back then, it wasn't like that. Back then, you were supposed to keep these things hidden. And therefore, so this guy was going to douse it, but him, and therefore, the Chachamim said about him that he was punished by that, by he was stung by this hornet and died. Anyway, the point is, the expression in this story is, Umachse Ba'adzifi, that it struck him in the Adzifi. So we see that the word Adzifi means the forehead. Okay. Mishnah continues. Adama, if a person carries out on Shabbos earth, specifically it means Rashi translates it with a French word, meaning a certain kind of earth, a certain kind of clay, the Rambam explains that it's red, and they use it for stamps, they use it for seals on things. So the shear is to choisem hamar sufin, the amount that it would take to make the stamp on a sack that's used for merchandise. So you have large sacks, Rashi described, that are made out of bark. They use them to carry merchandise and ships. And then they seal them with a stamp to show that what you're getting is what was packed originally. So you use this kind of red clay for that purpose. So that would be the shield. Divir Rav Akiva. That's what Rav Akiva says. V'cham say a smaller amount, it would be the amount that you would use for a seal on a letter. Okay. Zevel v'chol hadak, if a person carries out on Shabbos manure or fine sand, so then kedei lazav pelach shel kruv, then the amount would be, if it's enough to fertilize one stalk of cabbage, divir Rav Akiva. A smaller amount when it's enough to fertilize one leek, which a leek is smaller than a cabbage. If a person carries out on Shabbos thick sand, coarse sand, so that you can't use as fertilizer, then there's a different amount. Then it would be the amount that you can put on one trowel of plaster. Now, what does sand have to do with plaster? We're going to talk about in the Gemara, why you would mix sand with plaster. Koneh, if a person carries out on Shabbos a reed, which can be used to make a pen. In fact, the Sfaradim Adar Yamazeh use reeds for the pens that they write sackles with, whereas Ashkenazim use a feather. So if a person carries out a reed, and they lost his korbos, then he's chayev if the reed is large enough to make a pen to be able to write with. If the reed was very thick and you can't use it for a pen, or if it was cracked and again, you can't use it for a pen, then you consider it as firewood. Then you consider kedei levashim a beis kalas rebeitim. Then you chayev if it's large enough that you could use it to be able to cook the easiest egg of all eggs to cook, which we'll see in the Gemara what kind of egg that is. Trufa, when the egg is beaten together with oil unasuna beilfas and put into a pan, and then it's the easiest to cook. So then if you have enough reed over there that you can use for firewood to boil up such an egg, then you're chayav. So there's more sort of. We said al maloi kafsid. So we said as far as coarse sand, that if it's enough sand to put on a trowel, by the way, is one of these, is a flat keli that you use to spread plaster. You pour some plaster or whatever, and then you spread it around using the trowel. So we're talking about if you have enough sand to put on that, then you chayav. The tana, because it's not pikach shosayodin. So to be exact, it means, we don't just mean a spoonful of sid, we mean this trowel, which is shaped like a spoon, and plasterers use it to spread out the plaster. So if you have enough coarse sand to fill that up, then that's the shiur to be chayav. So Gemara asks, man tana dechol mali leila sid, which tana says that sand is good to mix with plaster, and therefore that we should be kaveya the amount of sand based on the size of the trowel of plaster. Rav Chista says that would be according to Rav Yehuda. The Tanya, now like this, we learn in a Braisa in Bava Basra, the Gemara discusses over there various things that the Chachamim asked to do in remembrance of the Beis Hamikdash, in remembrance of the destruction of the Beis Hamikdash. Mishum Avelus Al Yerushalayim, Rashi says. So the Braisa says a person is not allowed to plaster his house with plaster. Elim can either by Kevin Oichoil, unless he mixed into the plaster straw or sand, because without those, the plaster is very bright white. And that is too beautiful to be doing nowadays in Golos. So the Tanakama is saying over there that as long as you mix in straw or sand, then it's good enough because that prevents it from being so bright white. Rabbi Yehuda says no. Tevin mutter, if you mix in straw, you are allowed to, because then you're allowed to plaster your house with it. Choil oser. But if you put in sand, then it's also mafneshu traksid, because what sand accomplishes is it makes the plaster much harder. It makes the plaster much tougher. So therefore, it's still considered that it's beautifying the plaster, and therefore it would be awesome. You see, according to Rabbi Yehuda, that sand in plaster is a good thing. But our Mishnah, when it mentions that the amount of sand goes according to the size of the trowel for plaster, is going according to Rabbi Yehuda. Rava says you don't even need that. Afilu teimer rabbanon, the our Mishnah could even be going according to rabbanon, because you could say kukulei zehu tikunai. And the fact that the sand messes up the sid and makes it darker, that itself, that's the kilkul. On the other hand, that makes the tikkud, where according to the bottom, precisely for that reason, you're allowed to use it, because now it's true, Rabbi Yehuda is saying it does make stronger plaster, but on the other hand, it's also not as white, and therefore you're allowed to use it. So according to Chachamim, just the opposite. The very fact that you have sand in there is what makes this plaster allowed to be used for your house. And therefore, even the Chachamim might say, therefore, that the amount of sand depends on the amount of plaster. So that's what it is then. By the way, you have the halacha on it. That the halacha is not quite like that. You are allowed to plaster your house. You're just supposed to leave a zeichel l'chorban. You're supposed to leave an amma. Space opposite the doorway, which is not plastered as a zeichel l'chorban. Nowadays, for various reasons, we don't do that.
I've seen a lot of houses have, when you walk in the hallway, they have a little space there as a zeichel l'chorban.
Okay, so some people are still careful about it, but not everybody is. One possibility is maybe our plaster or our paint is not quite as white as what they had in the time of the Gemara. Okay. We said in the Mishnah, Konek de Latif Kormus, we said if a person carries a reed on Shabbos, then the shear is if it's large enough to make a pen. But how large does the pen be? Tonne, we learn in a braisa. Kumus hamagia l'kishrei esvoisav. We mean a pen that would be long enough to reach the joints of his fingers. So boy Rabashi said, Rabashi asked, which joint? Keshra Elyon. Do we mean the upper joint, meaning the one that the joint when you're writing, your fingers are more or less upside down. So therefore, the upper joint would be the one that connects the finger to the palm of the hand, or the keshra tachton. Or do we mean the next lower joint, the one in the one in the middle of the finger? So which one? And the answer is teiku. We don't know. We don't know, and therefore, again, a person can't be chayav unless it was long enough to actually reach the joint that attaches the finger to the palm. Okay. We said in the Mishnah Vim Haya Avichula, we said if the reed was thick or broken and you can't use it for a pen, so then we said there's a different shear. Then we said it's the amount to be able to cook an egg. So we said in the Braisa, we said in the Mishnah rather that it's trufa. So trufa means beaten. So it doesn't just mean that the egg itself is beaten. Tana, we learn in a braisa, trufa b'shemen means the egg is beaten together with oil, which will make it cook faster. Unasuna b'ilpas, and it's placed into a pan, because that way it'll cook as fast as possible. In fact, you have the Rambam explains that actually that it means not only that, but the pot is preheated actually. You preheat the pan with this weed, and if now the pan is now hot enough that the egg will cook in it when you put it in, then it's the shear to be fired. Okay, the question is, we said in the Mishnah, Beta Kala, an easy egg. So what's the definition of an easy egg? Omale Magrej Ravina Lebre. So Magrej Ravina asks his son, Mishmialach Beta Kala Maihi. Have you heard from your Rebbeim what is the definition of a Beta Kala? Omale. So Magrej Ravina's son says, it means Beasa de Tziltzala. It means the egg of a Tziltzala, which is a small kind of bird. It's a small kind of bird. It's a kind of pigeon. So my grade of it says, why? My time. Meshum de Zutra. Are you saying just because it's considered the easy egg because it's small? In that case, Ema de Tipauta. In that case, you have an even smaller bird called a Tipauta, which is also a kosher bird, and the eggs of it are kosher. So then it could be even smaller. So that's even smaller than the egg of a Tziltzala. Why, doctor, did your Rebbeim say it's the egg of a Tziltzala? Ishtik. So the son was quiet. He didn't have an answer. Amalei, then he asks, Ma'avirei Ravina, Midishmiya Lachbaha, have you, Tappy, heard anything about it? Have you heard anything about it? So like this, in other words, he had learned this from his Rebbeim, that it's an egg of a Tziltzala, but the fact of the matter is he couldn't explain why Tappy shouldn't be a smaller egg. So Ma'avirei Ravina says, Hachi Amar Rav Sheshet. Yes, this is what Rav Sheshet said. It actually means Beitas Tanit Golmas. It means a chicken egg. Not an egg of a Tziltzala or a Tipauta, but a chicken egg. Umay Korola Beita Kala. So why we call it Beita Kala? Not because it's smaller, but because Shiru Chachamim, the Chachamim evaluated the various kinds of eggs, and they figured out, the easiest egg to cook is the egg of a chicken. The properties of our egg are such that it cooks faster than the eggs of other birds. The problem with that is, in that case, we've already established many times that when it comes to malachas involving food on Shabbos, the shear is a gergeres, which is smaller than a kebetza. You have a machlokas apoiskim, whether it's a third or a little less than a half. Whatever it is, it's certainly not an entire beitza. So why over here would we be going according to an entire beitza? The answer is amalei, hachi, amar Rav Nachman. This is what Rav Nachman says. We catch it, don't mean the whole egg. Kigregeres mi beitza kala. We mean a gregeres from the beitza kala. So in other words, so what would you do? You'd take a chicken egg. You'd take one gregeres worth of the material of the egg, of the white and the yolk of the egg. You'd mix them with oil. You'd put them in a pan which was already preheated with one of these beads. And if the pan is hot enough that the egg will cook in there, then that's the amount of weed that a person is hired for carrying on Shabbos. Okay.